Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this edition of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast. I am your host, Ant. The show can be found on the following streaming platforms at iTunes, iHeartRadio, Podbean, and Spotify. And we can be found on the top three social media platforms: on Facebook at Wrestling POV Podcast, on Instagram and Twitter at MMA POV Podcast. Joining me as my co-host for today, notice that for today, it is not Deontay. It is not the usual co-captain. I am pleased to have someone who has a history with Deontay and I by way of Running Back Radio. This young lady has an insane knowledge of mixed martial arts. She is indeed a future sports personality that you all will be quite familiar with, so you all better take notice now while you can. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming my special guest for today, J-Nail, just J-Nail Owens. J-Nail, how are you, ma'am?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Definitely glad to have you with us on today and you know, just to give our audience an idea of how knowledgeable you are of the game. So, you know, before we actually go into the show, just want to give you a chance to introduce yourself, you know, like who you are, what is it you do, what inspired you to get into the sport of mixed martial arts, and, you know, what has inspired you to, you know, go forward and put out the platforms that you do have in, you know, getting the recognition that you're aiming for as a sports journalist.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for having me. I totally appreciate it. I'm absolutely so happy, looking forward to this event. This event is pretty darn crazy. So I'm happy to be here to talk about this specific event. First off, yes. So like you said, my name is J-Nail. That's J-Nail Owens. But most of my stuff can be found under just J-Nail. That's J-U-S-T-J-A-Y-N-E-L-L. That would be my Instagram, my Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all of that. That's where I get all mostly MMA commentary, predictions, recaps, and things that happen in combat sports, period. Also a little bit of WWE because I am a wrestling nerd.
Okay.
So a few things that I do. Also, we all have mothers and daughters and sisters and all the women in your life. I also have my own jewelry line, and you can find that at Just J Accessories, where I do handcrafted earrings. They're all one of a kind. Each individual piece is extremely unique. So we all like to say, hey, thanks, but no, you can't get this. So, yeah.
That's I love it. So just to give our audience some insight, how is it that you became a mixed martial arts fan? What was it about the sport that intrigued you that said, you know what, I absolutely have to follow this sport?
Well, it started off with boxing with my dad. My dad is a huge sports fan, period. Whether it be, I mean, he watches everything from tennis to baseball. He's one of those people, golf, like everything. But he loves boxing. And I remember him throwing the fight parties. I kind of was a kid during the like Mike Tyson era, the Roy Jones Jr. type era, that sort of situation. And just watching the fight parties with him and his friends and remembering everybody getting all ready and prepared and then the fight starting and then everybody getting upset because the fight only lasted like 60 seconds because it was, you know, Mike Tyson,
right?
That whole thing. So it started off with that. And then I've got three younger brothers actually. And two of them actually started with karate. One of my cousins is a black belt in taekwondo. I have another cousin who actually played arena football for a while, but now he's transitioned into boxing. And he's actually in San Jose. He is the amateur heavyweight champion right now.
Okay, so nice.
Yeah, so I just kind of have a lot of athletes in my family. I have a few little fighters in my family. So growing up with them next to me, like my cousins taught me, you know, self-defense moves, they, you know, how to throw a proper punch, all those things. I grew up very physical. I played sports myself, volleyball, basketball, and all of that. So I'm basically just a student of the game. I haven't actually gotten a chance to train other than what the fighters in my family just kind of naturally taught me growing up, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But it did definitely help me with my understanding of what I'm seeing. And, you know, the more I learn about the sport, the more I get into the sport, it excites me. It is unpredictable. It is truly, it is, it, it's something you really can't get that feeling from anything else. You know, people have their issues with the judges and all of that sort of thing. But as yes. I say, underdogs win all the time in MMA. Indeed. What other sport can you actually even say that? Even if it's a team sport, NFL, this, that, and the other, underdogs win all the time. So that sort of, that unpredictability about the sport is something that I love. And then, you know, the beautiful violence.
Yes, nothing like it. Nothing like it. All right, Janelle, so we definitely thank you for, you know, giving everyone some insight as to who you are and your contributions to the game. So what we're going to do is we're going to move into the opening segment of our show, which is the MMA Hot Topic of the Week. It was announced Friday morning that Abdulmanap Nurmagomedov lost his battle with coronavirus, eventually dying. Abdulmanap was diagnosed with COVID-19 in April. He initially survived a heart attack after being diagnosed, which required immediate bypass surgery and placement into a medically induced coma. Excuse me. Right. Abdulmanap was 57 years old when he transitioned while in a Moscow hospital. And for those of you who don't know, this is Khabib Nurmagomedov's father. How did the passing affect you, and what kind of impact did he have, do you believe he had, on the MMA community while alive?
Well, I know, you know, everybody knows Khabib's father.
Yeah, everybody.
he's like Tyron Woodley's mother, Mama Woodley. Yes. Like, everybody knows her.
Excellent comparison.
So, yes.
Excellent.
So when we all heard this, whether you're, you know, a casual fan or not, you pretty much know who that is. And so the impact on the sports world is huge, but really in his community, Khabib's father was a figure in his community in, and was it Dagestan in Russia?
Yes.
Whatever you feel about Putin, he did know, you know, the president, he had a relationship with him, whatever you feel about Putin. Mm-hmm. And because of that relationship though, he was actually able to help the locals in his community. He was even there, if crime happened, people would go to his father. Let's try to figure out what happened. Let's get these gangbangers. Let's help fix this store. So he was actually a local figure in the community, not just in the MMA world. So it's actually quite a big loss. He was Papa Nurmagomedov for a lot of people, not just Khabib. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And just to add a caveat to that, you know, as you said, he was indeed like Papa Abdulmanap. And so at American Kickboxing Academy, AKA, he was literally looked upon as the father of that group as a result of Khabib's association with them. I mean, the right. MMA community poured out with all types of prayers and condolences and well wishes for Khabib and his family, considering, you know, the difficult time that comes with losing his dad. And even Conor McGregor, who everyone knows is Khabib's number one enemy, but a lot of people have to learn how to separate the villain Conor from the human being Conor. I mean, he has given praise. He gives praise, you know, when it's time to. And, you know, the honor that he gave to Abdulmanap, even when he was in the process of battling COVID-19, and even the love that he showed him. And I can't find the exact tweet, but, you know, just for him to say that this man was indeed a god in his sport, and to lose him, you know, it's disheartening. It just goes to show you the type of impact that this gentleman had.
57.
Yes, 57. A young 57. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I have to ask you this. What type of impact do you think this will have on Khabib moving forward?
You know, before this, Khabib has always talked about retiring fairly early. He said, you know, I've only got like one or two more fights and I'm pretty much done. And so I wonder if this is going to solidify that decision or if it's going to make him fight a little bit longer. Khabib is in his, what is it, 30, 31, 32?
Something like that, yeah.
And he hasn't taken much, well, actually, no. Earlier in his career, he actually did go through several injuries that actually had him off and on, you know, yearly. You have a year off, you're on, year off, you're on. So you know, he's got a young wife, or, you know, he's a newlywed pretty much.
Yes.
He's only married like a couple of years ago. I don't know if this is going to make him for sure, I'm done, let me focus on, you know, the other stuff in life.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it will make him, I wonder, I don't know. This kind of makes me feel like he's going to quit for sure.
I think eventually he'll walk away from the sport. I do. I mean, because again, his father has been there for him his entire career, and you're talking about an absolute shift.
Yeah.
In routine. I will say this. I think in the immediate future, with much respect to Justin Gaethje and what he did to Tony Ferguson back in UFC 249, I think Justin will be on the receiving end of hell knowing no fury, like an angry and hurting Khabib.
Right.
I don't see it going to the judges. I mean, I don't want to prematurely predict this match because we have a couple of months before it happens, but I think Justin is going to feel the unchained, unadulterated fury of Khabib.
Right. And hopefully, well, the fury of Khabib, if he's in his right mind, right?
There it is. That's so key.
Because Khabib doesn't fight emotional.
Right.
Even with all that stuff with Conor McGregor, once the bell rung, he was all business.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So he does not fight emotionally. And I do wonder if this is the type of event that could get him to fight out of character.
Right.
And if you fight out of character against somebody with the power of Gaethje, I mean, so I don't know how, I don't know. Honestly,
I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Because it could go either way. It could laser focus him in. It could, there's even part of me who thinks maybe he might want to fulfill, like step into his father's shoes, which could make him fight longer. You know what I mean? Can make him, you know, transition into coaching or something like that. So, yeah, but yeah, as you said, his father is a huge part of his life and his career.
Indeed, he is.
So,
it's
a big loss. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, very tough. So now what we're going to do is we're going to go into our next segment, which is known as the Ground and Pound, where we just touch on a couple of, you know, hot news topics as it relates to the world of mixed martial arts. First things first, the craziness that surrounded UFC 251's main event. So during the 4th of July, a brand of fireworks came forth that no fight fan wanted to hear. Number one contender and number one welterweight contender and champion and Kamaru Usman's training partner, Gilbert Burns, along with his corner, were forced to pull out of his main event bout with his training partner as a result of he and his cornerman testing positive for COVID-19. A day later, we received word that Jorge Masvidal had agreed to terms to fight Usman in place of Burns at UFC 251, rekindling the bout that fight fans wanted from the jump. What were your thoughts as it related to the craziness and eventual resolution regarding 251's main event?
Yeah, well, I mean, once Jacare tested positive, what was that, on the first event that they tried to do?
Yeah.
I was like, man, all these events were on pins and needles until it happens.
Right.
And not even until it happens, like the day of.
Exactly.
Positive. So, I mean, every main event's in jeopardy. Every fight's in jeopardy. Like, this is crazy. But already the fact that it was Gilbert Burns was already, like, Gilbert Burns wasn't, because we wanted Jorge in the first place.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? We wanted Jorge in the first place.
These are facts. So,
Jorge wasn't getting the money that he asked for, so he decided to say no, and then he, of course, said he was going to quit and was going through that whole thing. Then we get Gilbert because Gilbert beats Tyron, which I don't think many people expected.
Nope.
So, and then this, so it's just like, it's such an emotional roller coaster. I just hope everybody makes it. I know that Jorge has passed his initial test, but of course he's going to get tested again once he arrives.
Yep.
And then I was wondering how long of a flight that is for him. And he's in Florida.
Yeah.
I wonder how long, because, you know, that jet lag is a real thing. 6 days is just simply not a lot of time.
Right. You know? Such short notice.
But no, it's, I don't know. It's crazy. I just hope everybody makes, I want to know about everybody else. Because, you know, it's three belts on this card.
Right.
I want to know everybody's. Right.
So. Absolutely. You brought up some interesting points that, you know, I didn't even consider. The jet lag, Jorge accepting his fight on 6 days short notice.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I'm thankful that the fight is happening, but, you know, we do have to consider the fact that there are some asterisks that ought to be applied, considering, you know, the terms in which it came together. We're eventually going to get into our prediction segment of the show, which is known as the Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast Pay-Per-View Points Game. Try saying that fast four times fast. So we're going to get into that, get into predictions, but as it stands right now in reference to how the fight is currently structured, I am excited, but we got to consider that there are some caveats involved that could play a role in the actual outcome showtime.
Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing's for sure until it happens. They got to get off plane and get, you know, in a, some kind of transportation to wherever they got to go. And then they got to stay there in the room and not leave. And then it's just like, this is just, because it wasn't just Gilbert that tested positive. Members of his corner did it.
Yep.
So, and then, you know, like I said, asymptomatic for at least 5-6 days. So that means someone could literally have got it now and test positive on Saturday.
That's true. So true.
I just horrible.
I know, right? It's tough. On one end, you applaud UFC's efforts for pushing through the COVID-19 era of life and trying to give us fights. But on the other end,
I'm excited to see what the building looks like.
Yes.
The whole building that they've constructed.
Right.
You know?
Like, like I saw some pictures. I haven't seen a video yet, but from the diagram that I did see of Fight Island, it looks like an adult playland. So I'm excited. Yeah? Yeah. Oh, you have to see. Yeah. Go online, look up the Fight Island diagram. And I believe there's actually a video that captures everything that it features, but it legitimately looks like an adult amusement park. And my prayer is that we could get back to some sort of normalcy so that, you know, we could actually go to Fight Island and witness fights, not only as journalists, but as fans, just taking the experience.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, it would be. Speaking of UFC cards, we're going to move forward to UFC 252. There is an update to UFC 252, but it's not to the main card. As we know, UFC heavyweight champion Stipe Miocic and lead challenger and former champion Daniel DC Cormier are set to conclude their rivalry in the form of a trilogy. It will take place at UFC 252 in Sin City. While the main card has yet to be determined, the prelims have been established. They are as follows. Junior Dos Santos versus Jarzino Rosenstruck, Lavina Souza versus Ashley Yoder, Magomed Ankalaev, and forgive me for my pronunciations, versus Ion Cutelaba, Felice Herrick versus Vernia Jadiroba, Rogerio Buntorin versus Manuel Cape, and Salim Imadev versus Lorena Sturopoli. Are there any prelim fights that jump out to you as must-see TV?
Well, that main event, obviously, with the JDS and the Jarzino.
Yes.
That's obviously the what is it called? The main event of the prelims.
Right, right. The feature fight. Yeah, main event of the prelims. Yeah.
That could easily be a co-main event on the main card, of course, especially every time you got the big boys fighting. But that Magomed Cutelaba fight.
Yeah.
As I don't know if you saw the Cutelaba, the last fight where he was, I don't want to say robbed, but the stoppage was the most clear, premature stoppage I've ever seen in my life. The man was clearly playing possum. He was, you know, clearly still in the fight.
Yep.
And that fight was bananas. It was going crazy. So I'm very anxious to see where Cutelaba's head is going to be. I know he wants to get that win back.
Oh, yeah.
And even in that matchup period, because Magomed is an exciting fighter as well, I'm actually surprised that could have been the main event of the prelims, honestly.
Mm-hmm. True.
So that's a good fight. And that's kind of like in the middle of the prelims. That, you know, that's one that would stick out to me. I think it's going to be a good one.
Absolutely. And I'll actually echo your sentiment to a T. That's going to be fun. More than anything, I'm just looking forward to seeing who else is going to accompany DC and Stipe on the main card.
Because I'm like, if that's the prelims, those are pretty decent prelims.
Yeah.
That could
be
a little fight night right there. So those are the prelims. I am anxious to see who they're putting on that main event.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. And as we do get more information in reference to UFC 252, we here at MMA POV Podcast, along with Jess J. Nail, throughout her platform, we'll update you guys as to what's going on. Next, we have Brendan Schaub, who contracted COVID-19 after downplaying the seriousness of it. So Sharp, who has been given a platform thanks to his past role as a co-host with Joe Rogan on his podcast, has repeatedly scoffed at the idea of COVID-19 being a serious health threat. In these exact words, the former UFC heavyweight combatant tweeted, "Cases clap, don't clap, matter clap, only deaths." You know, with the whole clap, clap thing every time you say something. Then he goes on to say, "Figure it the fuck out. Hide in your house while everyone else is back to normal. Educate yourselves and look at the trend of declining deaths. 7,000 people died in America every day, not from corona. There were 600 deaths due to corona. So I don't know what it is about people who feel a need to dismiss the severity of this disease, yeah. But there was the, if I'm not mistaken, the Utah Jazz, and I'm sure this touches home for you in a sense because you are right. From Utah, or you do have a connection to the state of Utah, yes. So for Rudy Gobert to come out and troll the severity of the disease only for him to later catch it himself,
right.
You would think athletes or anyone abroad would choose their words more carefully, but apparently Brendan Schaub either did not get the memo or he did and he disregarded it. And now he too has COVID-19. You know, what is your take on Schaub's dismissal of COVID-19?
That doesn't surprise me. He is, if you listen to his show, he is a bit of a like contrarian.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of, even if it's a trend that he may believe in, he'll kind of go out of his way to seek out the opposite opinion just to kind of give both sides. So it's not surprising to me that he was like, oh, everybody's tripping over nothing. Mm-hmm. That's not right. Surprising, actually. Right. I want to know, what has he said since he got it?
That's a great question. I haven't seen anything as of yet. So I have to, I guess, make that my homework this week to pound the pavement to see if he
I've seen other people reacting to it.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's he saying now?
Is what right. I Right.
And how sick did he, I mean, is he actually showing symptoms? Was he hospitalized? Or, you know what I mean? How severe?
That's a great question. The article that I did read, it didn't detail exactly the level of sickness he's enduring at the moment, but it did confirm he does have the virus.
Right. And showing symptoms. I mean, right. When you saw, I mean, this is not a fighter, but comedian D.L. Hughley, who actually thought he had already had it, ended up doing a show and passed out on stage just like last week.
Yeah, how scary was that?
Yeah. So this is, I mean, and with all these examples of people who, although the ministers and the preachers, especially in the South, who were saying, you know, God will save me, you don't have to do anything, and then unfortunately caught it and passed away themselves.
Right.
You would think that that would be enough to be like, you know what, just be on the safe side.
Yeah. And what's funny to me is, you know, because I grew up of the faith, Christianity, you know, been to church, things of that nature. And yes, God is a God that can save, but God also calls us to use wisdom. So you don't go out in a public where a pandemic is running rampant and say to yourself, okay, I could go out, I'll be fine. And if I catch it, then, you know, God will save me. Yeah. Again, God does have saving power, but he also calls for us to be wisdom. You know, calls for us to use wisdom. Nobody runs out into a busy highway playing in traffic saying, yeah, I'm going to get hit, but God will save me.
Exactly.
That's not how faith works.
Exactly.
You know?
But when it's something you can't see, it's
right.
Harder for people to grasp. And then unfortunately, as a culture, we're very me first.
Yes.
Like, you know, talk about in Japan, how they were able to get ahead of it without closing down anything.
Right.
But that's because culturally in Japan, when they get sick with a common cold, they go out in masks,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to spread it to everybody else. That's
right.
Just how they are.
Right.
So once this happened, over 80% of the population had the masks on. They had the contact tracing. They were doing the social distancing as a population.
Yes.
As a population here, you know, every state, something different, every county, something different, every, you know,
yeah.
How are we supposed to get a handle on it when there's no plan?
Right.
No solid plan.
Yep, I agree.
And if just knowing that, even if you're somebody who doesn't believe it, you don't take it seriously, just knowing that we happen to be in a time where there's no cohesive plan, that alone would just make me cautious. But, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do my own hair, so I don't have to go to the hair salon. I do
awesome.
My own nails. You know what I mean? So
yep.
I don't have those things.
Yeah. And I can definitely attest to that because I have a bald head, so I can shave my own head, shape up my beard,
right.
And I'm good to go. You got to take precautionary measures sometimes.
People who are just, they're going crazy on the inside. And I'm like, you know, I've taken the opportunity to work out more. I'm trying to get in shape. Do that.
Yes. Yes. There are ways to occupy your time during this pandemic. I cannot dispute that at all.
Right.
Cannot argue with you on that.
So Brendan doesn't, and if you listen to his podcast, this doesn't surprise you.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I haven't listened to it yet.
And he, you know, it's actually good. It's actually a really good podcast.
Okay.
It's funny, on great guests and all of that.
Right.
But he, you know, very much I should have been higher ranked as a heavyweight than I was. I should have had a better career than I did. I should, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's sort of thing.
So it doesn't surprise me that he thought he was invincible and not a big deal.
And unfortunately, it came back to bite us. So my hope, or our hope, brother, is that moving forward, he and any and everyone else that has access to this news learns from this. And not speak ill of something that could, you know what I mean, infiltrate your body at any given moment. Be careful. So, as a kid, let me ask you, did you play with toys? Were you, like, really active with toys? And were there certain toys that, you know, really spoke to you and they were must-haves for you?
Well, again, I'm raised around a lot of boys.
Yeah.
But they still, like, they still kind of force that whole girly thing on you.
Right.
Anyways, but as I just mentioned, I do my own hair. That's because my mom had to get me dolls with long hair.
Gotcha.
I didn't play house. I didn't play mom or anything like that. We played Yusuan. So okay. That was a must-have, was something with hair that I could do. And then the other must-have was remote control cars.
Nice.
I've got three brothers, and I got sick of them always getting Hot Wheels and race sets and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, can I get a remote control car?
Right. What about me?
Like, oh, you like that? I was like, yes. So, and even to this day, I have remote controlled cars, and now I'm crossing over into drones.
Nice. Awesome.
Up in my ante here, get a little bit of money.
Okay.
So
yeah,
that's something that stuck with me from childhood.
Well, there may be some other toys that are about to come forth that you may want to actually invest in. And I know I am, when I get my man cave and everything set up the way I want it, I'm definitely going to invest in these. So UFC has partnered with toy maker Jazzwares to create a line of UFC action figures. So from PR Newswire, Jazzwares, a global leader in play and UFC, the world's premier mixed martial arts organization, are teaming up to bring forth the exciting world of UFC and mixed martial arts into homes everywhere with a new line of UFC action figures and role play collectibles. Now available for pre-sale at Ringside Collectibles, Jazzwares UFC collectible line is coming soon to Amazon and will be available in Walmart stores in early August. The inaugural line of action figures includes light heavyweight champion John Bones Jones, lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov, who we discussed earlier, former light heavyweight and heavyweight champion Daniel DC Cormier, who we also discussed earlier, former featherweight and lightweight champion Conor McGregor, former featherweight champion Max Bless Holloway, and Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who holds the record for most wins in UFC history, amongst other company records. What does this do for you and your inner child, knowing that UFC is about to drop a new line of action figures?
I'm actually excited about this.
So am I.
I'm going to get the first line for sure.
Yes.
I think they're going to be collector's items no matter what. And especially since, like John Jones is retired apparently right now.
Yeah.
If he were to stay retired, then, those things might be worth money.
Right.
But it's a toy that I'm excited about, but yeah, I won't be playing with it. It's something that I will be keeping probably in the package.
Yes.
Or somehow, like in a, in a case where it can't get ruined. But I definitely plan on getting, especially this first line.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely plan on getting it to him.
That is a heck of a first line, and I feel the same way now. The inner kid in me will want to take him out and run my own UFC events, but like you say, for the sake of maintaining the freshness and the purity of them, it may be best to just leave them in the containers and not even chase them, because
they will be my toys that you cannot play with.
Right, because guess what, we both have nieces and nephews and little cousins, and
yep.
When they see toys, they're not going to know the importance of preserving them. They're just going to want to play. And so, yeah,
exactly.
It's best to keep them locked away. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to implement something new. The MMA POV podcast mid-year awards, where we discuss, things that we feel like should be award winners up to the halfway point of the calendar year. Then we're going to go into our UFC 251 MMA POV pay-per-view points game, and hopefully J-Nail will be considered being a regular player. And then from there, we'll go into our final decision. This is Ant along with J-Nail, MMA POV podcast. We'll be right back.
What's up, everybody? This is MMA Hall of Famer Randy the Natural Couture. Listen to Ant and Deontay on the MMA POV podcast. That's an order.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. I am your host, Ant, and once again, alongside me for this episode of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast, it is Miss J-Nail, just J-Nail Owens. And what we're going to do is we're going to introduce to you a new segment, something that will come forth once a year. It is the MMA POV Podcast Mid-Year Award. So, yes, we realize that we have been inundating you with weekly moments in MMA history. And, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to give you a break from the archives of the sport to instead discuss with you moments that have taken place at this point of the year and what, you know, we may deem as the mid-year award winner for various categories in the game. Okay, so, J-Nail, here we are. Halfway point of the calendar year, we know that you know a lot of it has been interrupted as a result of COVID-19, and then we do unfortunately have it limited to UFC, considering it has been the one organization that has persevered throughout the pandemic, and you know other organizations like your Bellators and your ONE Championships have been inactive. So I just want to throw a couple of categories your way, you know, just to kind of get a feel of what you think deserves the mid-year award up to this point. So first I want to pitch your way knockout of the mid-year. Who do you think has earned the knockout of the mid-year award thus far?
Knockout of the mid-year, and this is probably because it's fresh in my memory, but the first one that comes to mind is Cody Garbrandt and Rafael Sanchez.
Yes.
Just because at the buzzer.
Yeah, a buzzer beater. For you NBA fans out there.
Yes. At the bell, you're right.
Yeah.
You know I do more than just one sport. Yes.
right. Yes, you do.
But yeah, at the bell, freaking the way he baited him in with the feint first, stuck his chin out to bait to get him to come closer, gauged it. Then he basically pushed off the fence, twist like Dragon Ball Z cartoon style. Like, I mean, just amazing. But on that same card, of course, is the Sean O'Malley KO on that same card, which was also – no, he was – is that the one where he bit on the feint?
Yes.
That's for Sean O'Malley where he bit on the feint.
One. Yep.
Yes. And so that one – I mean, so those two, again, because they're fresh, I'm trying to think if there's probably – there's probably another one that happened this year that was just as incredible, but those two come to mind, especially Cody Garbrandt.
Now, I agree wholeheartedly. Cody Garbrandt does get the MMA POV Mid-Year Award for a knockout of the mid-year. However, another one that should go into contention is the Francis Ngannou knockout of Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Impact and the power that came with the blow, it was cringeworthy.
Yes. He wasn't ready.
Yeah, at all. At all. Not at all. All right. Next category is submission of the year. Who would you give the submission of the year mid-year award to?
Oh, submission of the year. We just saw, what did we just see? With his last breath, he tapped out. Again, it's because it's fresh. Who was that? With his very last breath, he tapped out and then he went out. Oh, I know. It just happened.
And you got me thinking.
Yeah, that was the one. But we just had a nice arm bar in the last event. We had, I'm trying to think if we had anything like standing. Mm-hmm. I love it when someone gets a standing submission. That's just always, you just don't see it very often, you know?
Right. Was that?
Girl tapped old girl with that knee bar.
Yes.
Hannah Sai, you don't see those very often either. That was a good one.
That is true.
That was Hannah Cypher's she submitted. But it's going to bother. I'm trying to think of that one that I just saw where he tapped out with his last breath. Oh, I think it was on the Blades Volkanov.
Oh my gosh.
That is going
to
bother.
I'm stuck. I know, right? We'll have to come back to it. But I know for me.
Was that the Roosevelt Roberts?
It might have been Roosevelt Robinson. Oh, what is the other guy's name? I want to say it was Roosevelt.
I think it was Roosevelt Roberts. And is that Jim? No, he lost to him. That's who I think that was.
But okay. Who were you thinking? Okay. I'm thinking Thug Nasty Bryce Mitchell and his Twister submission of Matt Sales at UFC on ESPN 7. I was there personally for that. And so, because it was in DC. Yes. Yeah. And so I was there personally for that. And I actually had a chance to meet him at the tunnel. And he was coming back. I screamed to him, "Get Thug Nasty his camo shorts," and he loved it, and he pointed up at me like he appreciated it. And as a fan of the sport and one that is, like, you know, tired of the routine look of the current gear that the fighters wear, I feel like the fighters should be allowed to personalize their gear. And so give Thug Nasty his camo shorts. Let DC wear Oklahoma State colored shorts. I mean, give him some personality, you know?
Well, the Reebok was supposed to, you know, further the brand into, like, the average household and all that sort of thing. Yeah. I haven't seen the numbers as to whether or not that is what actually happened or not.
Same here. But,
yeah, I haven't seen the numbers on that. However, I don't think it's made such a big difference to where I know it's taking money away from the fighters.
Right.
That's the one that we do know, is that a lot of them like their smaller sponsorships from their local places. Right. So that's about the only thing that we do know. So, I feel you. You know, the Reebok deal was a nice experiment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's go back and, you know, let them do what they got to do. The UFC's big enough to where they don't need to latch on to an established brand anymore, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So my next category is, who is your comeback fighter of the mid-year?
Comeback fighter of the mid-year. So that would be somebody who was off track.
Off track, or might have been on hiatus as a result of injury or personal issues. Yeah, and then came back and made an impact.
You know, I was really hoping for that Walt Harris. Unfortunately, he didn't.
Yes. Oh, God. You know, I know.
He unfortunately didn't win that fight.
Yeah.
But someone who's been gone, who came back and won. I mean, again, I need to do more studying for this.
It's okay. It's all right.
I keep going with what's fresh, which would be Poirier.
Yeah. Yes. Great comeback. That's a legitimate nomination for that category. I mean,
but again, I'm sure there's somebody who came back even.
Yeah. For me, I have to go with my girl Mackenzie Dern. You know, she tried to come back after her pregnancy last year, and things didn't quite go her way. And, you know, some people were questioning her ability to fight moving forward. You know, they was just so quick to dismiss her. And then for her to come back and do what she did against Hannah Cyphers, you know, in the UFC Jacksonville card and get that, you know, quick, was it either UFC Jacksonville or Vegas, whichever one it was, for her to get that submission the way she did.
I think she was who I'm talking about too.
Okay. Gotcha.
Didn't she get the arm bar?
I thought it was an ankle lock of some sort.
Or an ankle lock.
Yeah. But for her to get the submission the way...
Against Cyphers.
Yes, it was against Hannah Cyphers. Yes. Yeah. So for her to get that the way she did, and, you know, the silence, the doubters who felt like, you know, she might have lost just because she had a child. I mean, come on, she's a woman. If she desires to have a child, let her do so. That doesn't question her ability to fight. So, you know, for her to get the win that she did. Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, what we have seen is a trend in women's sports, and all women's sports, is unfortunately after they do have a baby, it does seem to diminish their skill.
Yeah.
That is what we have seen. There are a few women, of course, who have come back, a couple of track stars who have come back and won major races after they had their babies. But even if you look at Serena Williams, she won her last major while she was pregnant.
Right.
She hasn't won one since, and she's been to the championship 3 times. That might just be because of age.
Yeah.
You never know.
There's that too.
There could be other factors. But we do see there is a reason why female athletes wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our bodies are different. And when you just think about the process of having a baby, it strips your bones.
It does.
Strips your bones, strips your muscles, strips everything. Like your hair is more brittle, your teeth. I mean, so of course, you know, that's going to have a diminishing effect on your abilities. So that's why I am rooting for women like her that have a baby to come back and perform at a high level. It is something that I do love to see. So I have to agree with you on that.
Like, just keep letting us know. Baby's not the all be all.
Right, right. Exactly. That's the point. You know what I mean? I'm trying to. That's what I'm trying to bed home with, that. That is not the end all be all. And then finally, since we did mention Dustin Poirier earlier, the mid-year fight, well, the fight of the mid-year. Who's your take, or who's your call? Or what fight is your call?
That is a consideration, obviously. Yes. But, and this one's not fresh, mm-hmm. but it has to be, for me, it's Weili Zhang and Joanna, pigeon chick.
Oh, my God.
That fight, even though everybody looks at Joanna's face and thinks that, you know, she just lost. Hey, go back and look at Weili's face as well.
Yeah.
She ate like 15 years when she was doing the post press
conference. Yeah, she did.
I was like, why does her face look so old? Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's swollen.
Yeah, that it was.
So that she didn't look that good herself. But that fight, when you go back and look at the stats, it was so back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It was back and forth, back and forth. And I agree with the win, but you can make the case for Joanna, especially when you look at the numbers. So it being that close, because in the Dustin Poirier fight, I do kind of agree with a lot of people who say that second round might be candidate for best round.
Brand, yes.
So far. Yeah. But in the whole fight, in the latter rounds, Hooker started to gas. Started to slow down.
He did.
And Dustin started to take over that fight. The fourth and fifth round went to Dustin. In fact, most judges gave him the last three.
Right.
So because it got more one-sided, even though it was still spectacular, because it got more one-sided, I have to give it to the Weili. Although, I think the Josh Emmett Shane Burgos fight
was
also bananas.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And I have to agree with you that it is undisputedly Weili and Zhirgechik, because those women came forth for all five rounds. And for Joanna you could look at Joanna's face and you could see that she had a hematoma the size of a turtle shell.
Oh,
however, she still came forward and she actually outstruck Weili.
Yes.
But Weili's strikes were more powerful and impactful.
Yes.
And to see those two trade blows the way they did, I'm comfortable in saying any great fight that comes forward is not going to top that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, again, because it was competitive the whole time.
Yes.
Like, Joanna won, I think she won the fourth round, Weili won the fifth. So, like, it was competitive the entire fight.
Yep.
So, it was, I mean, and again, when I went back and looked at the stats, I was like, okay, I see why some people are making that case for Joanna.
Yeah.
You can see there's multiple rounds where she outstruck her. She landed more. The momentum as far as who was pushing the pace, moving back and forth, controlling the center of the octagon, went back and forth. I mean, just that fight was a roller coaster.
Indeed it was.
But there's been a lot of competitive fights that surprised me. Like, I call her Roxy. We did Roxy, yeah, but Raquel Pennington. And the Marianne Renault, was surprised that fight was as competitive as that was. So there's been a few fights where whoever that main that co-main event was on that Israel Adesanya. Oh no, that's the Joanna fight.
Yes, that will be it.
Like that undercard on that.
Yeah,
that Israel stole that show. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. But there's been a few fights so far that this year that have been just awesome fights.
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, I have to correct myself. There is one more category we absolutely have to discuss. Who is your fighter of the mid-year? I can't wait to hear your answer.
Fighter of the mid-year. I tell you, if Petr manages to win, he would be one of my candidates for sure.
Yeah.
If he manages to win the fight. See, who else fighter of the year so far who stuck out? I'm trying to think who has, who's blossomed this year. I thought Roosevelt Roberts was on his way, then he ran into Jimmy, but that too soon.
How about that?
I think he was on one, and he was kind of feeling himself.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Miller is a very sneaky, smart fighter, and just because he's old don't mean anything.
Nothing. So he's a dog.
Right, he took that too soon because I was looking, because it surprised me. I was like, wait a minute, here we go. Oh, and then I know I'm rooting for Mike Perry, especially after that. And then when you see what he's going through.
Yes.
He's
just
out there talking about, I don't need nobody in my corner except for my chocolate cupcake or whatever he
calls her. Right, right, right.
That's a mess. But when afterward you see he's going through something. He's obviously impressed his coaches. He's financially going through some hardships. He's going through some things. That's a fighter that I'm definitely rooting for. But, yeah. So far, I guess I can't nail down one yet for my mid-year. There isn't anyone, I guess, who's stuck out, who's, like, become a star.
Right.
This year. Not yet.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I said, but I'm looking at if Petr, if he can win this fight.
Yeah.
I'll be looking at that.
So for me, and some people might, you know, feel like, she shouldn't, you know, because of who she is and how she's already established. But for me, you already know where I'm going. You already know where I'm going. You're right. My mid-year fighter of 2020 is Amanda Nunes.
Of course. You're absolutely right.
Let me tell you why. I mean, yes, she did beat Felicia Spencer, but let's look at her overall body of work, if you will. You have Conor McGregor, Daniel Cormier, Henry Cejudo. I think I covered them all as far as the champs are concerned in the sport.
And Henry would have been first.
Yes, yes.
He had not vacated that flyweight
belt. Yes, thank you, thank you. Would have been. But since he did vacate, Amanda Nunes has become the first fighter in UFC history, man or woman, to successfully defend two titles while in that fighter's possession.
Right.
Not only that, but she has tied Ronda Rousey over a course of two divisions with six straight title defenses.
Yes.
Let's stop playing games. Let's stop messing around and place this woman onto the Mount Rushmore of mixed martial arts. Right. Not only that, but Dana White and whoever the financial people are, the CFOs or whoever, open up your wallets and give Amanda more than $350,000 a fight.
That's the only reason why she's over here talking about retiring.
Yes.
First off, she has the leverage now. She's like, I got both your divisions.
Exactly.
What you gonna do?
Exactly.
Like, you know, I am your hottest female ticket, whether you want to pay me like it or not.
Yep.
So I understand why she's feeling that way. And she has the space to take some time because, you know, her wife is pregnant.
Yes.
And she has the space. There's nobody in line right now in the featherweight or the bantamweight division.
Nobody.
She could take a year off. Yep. And since she can take a year off, let me get your thoughts. At first, when Clarissa Shields came out and said what she had to say, I was like, not only is Amanda going to say no, I agree with her. Amanda, don't you get in that ring and fight Clarissa Shields. No.
Right, right.
I was totally with her. But now that we find ourselves in a situation where, like I said, Amanda could take off a year and hold those two belts, and you couldn't make the case for making an interim champion or anything. There is no one in either weight divisions. So now I'm like, Amanda, take off a year. Get your boxing together. Because she acts like she doesn't box, like she doesn't have a bunch of amateur boxing titles.
Right, right, right.
Right. She tries to say, act like she does. That's why she looks like that. That's why she's the best striker in all of the female divisions.
Yeah.
So take some time off. Focus on your boxing. Mm-hmm. Consider getting into the ring with Clarissa Shields.
Please.
And this is why I say this. UFC, the boxing world. I know no woman has ever made anywhere near $10 million apiece. Give it to them. Not only could you sell it, you can sell it. Plus, I'll put a high name like undercard on there, like a Errol Spence Jr. or Terrence Crawford or something like a Sean Porter. Put them on the co-main. Put Clarissa Shields versus Amanda Nunes. Make it a catch weight at the lowest Clarissa can make, which is probably going to be like 145, 150, something like that, right? So make it at the lowest that she can make. Even though Amanda will most likely lose, let's, you know, get this straight.
Yes, yes.
The spectacle will be worth it. And you know, everybody talks about Clarissa, she ain't got knockout power, this, that, and the other. Mm. So you could sell it, and if you could sell McGregor Mayweather McGregor.
Yes.
You can sell Clarissa Shields, Amanda Nunes. You can sell it. And then make it a two-fight deal. Amanda's going to fight you in a year, and then in another year, that way we give Clarissa like 2-3 years, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You get in the octagon. And you can sell that too. Pay them $10 million for both fights, $5 million apiece.
Yep. And
do it.
And you know what? You have covered the spectrum excellently. I feel like if boxers are going to crossover in the MMA or, you know, vice versa, it should be a two-fight situation
where
they're fighting in each other's platform. And then if for any reason there's a split, why not go for a 2 out of 3? Like you said, make a complete spectacle out of it.
Right. And with someone like a Clarissa Shields, I believe, I've heard her talk about it. She is actually considering transitioning into MMA permanently after boxing. So I believe she is 24 years old, I believe. I'm actually looking her up right now. Yeah, she's 25.
She just turned 25. Gosh, she's a baby. I didn't realize Clarissa was that young.
She's that young. Yeah. And that once I realized how young she just turned 25 in March. Mm-hmm. Dude. How many more titles she's going to have in boxing? There's really not too many more people for her to fight unless they actually do get that Leila Lethe cracking. And I'm down for that, too.
Yeah.
If the men can have spectacle fights and make a bunch of money, why can't the women?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm totally for it. But, yeah, she just turned 25. Clarissa could take 3 years off, 4 years off, and reintroduce herself into MMA at 29, 30 years old. She won't have the wear and tear of an MMA fighter who's been doing it the whole time. She'll have a longer career. She could actually transition for real, and she'll be a featherweight. That division would be wide open for her.
Yes.
She could take over for Amanda if she could get enough takedown defense, all of those things, right?
Yep.
Depends on how she takes to the sport. But I already know that she's already working on her kicks. She's actually already working with MMA fighters right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, do you see why I'm so grateful to have J-Nail come on as a special guest co-host? I mean, she brings the boxing knowledge, the mixed martial arts knowledge, the pay and the booking and the promoting knowledge. I mean, what can't she do? This is why I'm so thankful that she was able to come in last minute and fill in for Deontay. All right, so what we're going to do, and you all appreciate it. What we're going to do now is we're going to go into our Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast pay-per-view points game. So basically what the pay-per-view points game is that you pick your fighter, you pick their method of victory, and you pick the round in which they're going to win. And so basically we focus on the main card of a pay-per-view. The only time we'll go into the prelims is if you have a situation where you have stars fighting on a prelim, as was the case with Cowboy against Anthony Pettis or something along those lines.
Right.
So what we do is we'll track your results. And so at the conclusion of every pay-per-view, you'll see the overall standings as well as the winner for that specific event. Now the winner at the end of the Mixed Martial Arts pay-per-view points game calendar year, which will be March of 2021, that winner will receive a $50 Visa gift card or gift card to any store or place of their choosing, along with an autographed Randy Couture bobblehead, though.
Nice.
So would you be interested in playing?
Yes, of
okay,
course.
Sweet. We got a new player in J-Nail. We love it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to work from the opening bout of the card all the way up to the main event. And then, of course, J-Nail, you just do what you do best. I pitch the fights your way. You give your analysis and your take as to who will be the winner. But make sure you, since you are playing the pay-per-view points game, you make sure you include your winner, the method of victory, and the round you think they'll win. And then, of course, if you think it's going to go, you know, to the end, just say decision. So first, the opening bout will be Amanda Ribas, who is the 14th ranked strawweight contender, will be facing Paige VanZant in a UFC women's flyweight division. Now, keep in mind, this is Paige VanZant's final fight on her current UFC contract, and there's already speculation that she's going to jump ship to Bellator to join her husband. And forgive me for forgetting his name at the moment, but it's very likely that she's going to join her husband over at Bellator. So, J-Nail, how do you see this fight playing out?
This one, Amanda Ribas she's a beast, actually. they kind of throw in Paige VanZant to the wolves a little bit. She's been out for a year and a half.
Yeah, she has.
She had multiple surgeries on a broken arm. So I am picking Amanda.
Let's see. Do I think I if it, she finishes her, I think it will be a submission.
Okay.
Let's see. I'll go ahead and I'll pick a submission.
All right.
Submission, second round.
Okay. So for me, I'm also going to go with Amanda. I too am thinking submission, second round. I just feel like with Paige, like you said, UFC is throwing her to the wolves, especially in her last match on contract. Yeah. And, you know, this might be presumptuous on my part, but I already have a feeling that that Paige is looking forward, you know, to her eventual Bellator days. I feel like she's out the door. I don't think she's coming back. I'd be shocked if she resigns with the UFC. So
I'm going
Amanda.
Yeah.
All right. In the second bout of the card, we have a rematch of a UFC Women's Strawweight Championship match where Jessica Andrade will be facing Rose Namajunas. And for those of you who don't know, the last time these two fought for the title, Rose statistically was winning this fight. But then Jessica Andrade landed this slam that, you know, rattled Rose Namajunas and eventually turned the tide of this fight and allowed Andrade to become a UFC Women's Champion.
Yes.
They're going to dance one more time. How do you see this dance playing out?
This one, I am going to pick Rose.
Okay.
She, even though she did lose the last fight, if you saw exactly what happened, not to take anything away from Jessica, but Rose held on. I believe it was a Kimura she was trying to get. And that's she correct. Held on to the arm for far too long, even when she was about to get slammed on her head. She should have let that go and protected herself. So, and again, not to take anything away from Jessica, if your opponent makes a mistake, you're supposed to capitalize. That's what she's supposed to do.
Right.
So, but as you stated, Rose was winning that fight, and she was clearly winning that fight. She was tagging Jessica up. So it's three rounds, not five. And Jessica's really tough.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to give it to Rose, but by decision.
Okay. Okay. Me too. I will also give it to Rose by way of decision. I think we're going to see a battle of power versus speed. And I think it's going to be one of those things where Rose is just going to stick and move. And, you know, she's going to collect points. You know what I mean? Just jabbing and moving about, making herself as impossible of a target for Andrade as she can.
The only thing I will say that's a wild card with Rose is her mental health.
Yes.
It's always a wild card with her, unfortunately. Yeah. She's just some struggles with that. So I do need to do a little bit of research just to see how she's feeling.
Where she is mentally.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to see how she's feeling. But if she's mentally there, that's my prediction. Yeah. My prediction. So.
All right. So the next bout, which is sandwiched in the main card, if you will, is Peter Yan, the number three contender for the men's bantamweight belt, facing former UFC featherweight champion and former WEC featherweight champion Jose Aldo. Now this fight is catching a lot of heat because they're fighting for the vacant UFC bantamweight title, which Henry Cejudo vacating for the sake of retiring. And this fight is catching a lot of heat because a lot of people feel like Aljamain Sterling should be in the bout. And, you know, they feel like, you know, he's being cheated at the moment. But this is what we have. And I understand why Aldo is in the slot because Aldo is a name. He is a draw. Yes. And, you know, they want to put eyes on this event. Me personally, my heart, in my heart of hearts, I would love for Aldo to become UFC's eighth two-division champion in company history, but you got to be careful with, you know, making emotional decisions over professional decisions. And looking at Peter Yan and how merciless he was with another UFC legend in Uriah Faber, this kid is hungry. He wants to establish himself as the next big name Russian in the company, and I think he's going to be merciless, and I unfortunately smell a knockout where Aldo will be on the receiving end of it. Now, if Aldo somehow pulls the unbelievable and he knocks this kid out or beats this kid, oh yeah, I'm gonna absolutely spaz out for him. I'm gonna scream for him and be excited. But I think this kid is like a miniature Drago. You know what I mean? If he dies, he dies.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How do you feel?
I said initially when you asked me about the fighter, I was like, well, if Petter wins, he might be my fighter. Until right. you reminded me about Miss Amanda.
Yes,
so
yes.
Even if Petter were to win again, it would still be Miss Amanda.
Yes.
But this fight, my initial thought, I was with you. I think it would be Petter. I think he's strong. I started doing my little research. Aldo mm-hmm. is bigger than him.
Yeah.
They are the same height, but Aldo has a 3-inch reach advantage of the hands. Okay. And he's got 2-inch reach advantage with the feet. As far as size-wise, thickness-wise, they're probably going to be around the same. If not, mm-hmm. Aldo might be a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
But they are going to – so that reach advantage – Aldo doesn't box long, but he's got those kicks.
True.
And we didn't see those kicks in the last fight because his foot was injured. But he's been off for 7 months. That last fight, I believe, was in January. Okay. They both are on the card. So they've both been off for about 7 months. And for Aldo, if his leg is healed and he can actually kick, to me, that throws a little wrench in the game. Also, with Aldo... Petter, I don't think he's going to stand with him as much, mm-hmm. especially if he gets in trouble. And with Aldo being a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, he's not like JDS who doesn't use it. Aldo will use it. If he gets right. in trouble, right. he will wrestle you. Yeah, he will grapple you.
Indeed.
So I wonder what will happen if that does happen, if Petter can stay off the takedowns and, you know, not get tired out by that. It's 5 rounds,
mm-hmm.
not 3.
Petter's
never been in a 5-rounder.
That's a valid point.
And as we saw with Aldo against Marais, and I am one of the people who feel like he won that fight, by the way.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, because also people are like, how did he get the fight? He's coming off a loss. Half of the recognized MMA outlets
mm-hmm.
think that Aldo won the fight. There yeah. are quite a few people who, including Dana White, which obviously that's important, right?
Right.
Right. think that Aldo won the fight. So, and I'm one of them. And it's one of those fights where, had it been 5 rounds, I actually think he would have finished Marlon. So,
yeah.
So, I am worried that we could see that here. Aldo was tougher. He's always tougher than these cats think. They think because he's old mm-hmm. and, you know, fight years, that they can just put him away. So, what I worry is that Petra's going to be boxing him up for 3 rounds, gas, and then Aldo get his second and third win and finish him in the fifth.
True.
So I was going to come out the gate with Petter. But then I started to think about it. I was like, well, Aldo's had time to heal. If he can kick and tear apart that lead leg of, you know, take some of that steam out early. You know what I mean? Like, and he looked good against Marlon. I think he won against Marlon. And I like Marlon. Marlon's a beast. Love to see Marlon and Petter. You know what I mean? So it just... I am actually going to pick Jose finish in the fifth.
You know what? Because, so the rules of the Mixed Martial Arts Point of View podcast, MMA, the views of the MMA POV pay-per-view points game is you have up until Saturday at 5 p.m., the day of the fight, to solidify your picks.
And oh, okay.
From what I'm seeing, it's Monday at 4:32 p.m., so you have convinced me to go ahead and go with my heart and go with my guy Aldo.
Two, I'm biased, too.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and exercise my bias, and I'm going with Aldo to beat Young.
But I will say,
uh-huh.
the way they look on the weigh-ins might change my mind.
Understood. Yeah. Understood.
If they look, you know, sunk out or kind of right. like – a little soft, because you know, with this quarantine, a lot of them aren't able to train the way they want to. So the way they look on the weigh-ins is a big factor to me.
Indeed. Yeah. I cannot agree with you more. Next we move up to the co-main event. It will be the rematch of Alexander Volkanovski, who this time around is the champion, versus Max Bless Holloway, who actually beat Jose Aldo to become champion, and many were considering him the new greatest featherweight in the division. Who do you have in this one, Janelle? I know.
This one's the other one.
I know.
And this one, and if y'all, and don't take my advice on this one, y'all, because my biasness is really coming out in this one, way more than the last one, because Max Holloway is one of my favorite fighters.
Yes.
Just hands down, he just is. And then when you add in Mini Blessed, I'm like, ah!
Right, right. You got to root for Mindy Bliss. And for no, if, no, if nothing else, you got to root for Mindy Bliss.
So, but in cases like this, I would normally stick with who the current champion is when this one's hard because the way that Alexander won,
yeah,
he actually fought out of his own character.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm having trouble with. That's the only thing. If Alexander would have won fighting his normal style, I would just go ahead and pick him again. It'd be easy. Mm-hmm. But because Alexander beat him fighting outside of his normal style, though that amount of leg kicks, he's never thrown that amount of leg kicks.
Right.
Ever. And he uses his kicks and his punches to open up his wrestling. He didn't go for one takedown.
Nope.
And fighting that new style, which is taxing on the body because your body's doing something new, as you see, he gassed in the fourth and fifth round.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he actually slowed down and Max was allowed to come back. Now, Max didn't make any adjustments.
Indeed. Indeed.
He made no adjustments. I'm just like, what? So, as of right now, I'm going with Alexander in a decision. Mm-hmm. But since you're telling me I have till Saturday.
Yeah, it could change. It could change.
Since I have till Saturday, I will be looking at the weigh-ins, like I said, and mm-hmm. I will be doing a little bit more research to see how they've been training. Because, you know, Max said he's basically been training with his coaches over Zoom and doing his workout. He hasn't actually seen his coaches in person, where I know Alexander had. So, yeah. So, that matters too. My heart wants to pick Max. My heart wants him to make the adjustments and get his belt back. But as of right now, I am going to go with Alexander in the decision.
Okay. So, for those of you who don't know, Max Holloway has blossomed into a fighter as a result of technology. He said he learned how to strike by playing the UFC video game.
Yep.
Now he's utilizing technology by way of Zoom
in
order to train for this upcoming bout. So one method of technological training has worked for him, you know, with the video game. I'm not sure if it's going to work for him while training for Volkanovski. And you mentioned that, you know, the difference between the two is that Volkanovski is actually training with his training partners. And for those of you who don't know, he is with one of the emerging gems of the sport, City Kickboxing, who has products such as Dan Hooker earlier mentioned and the current UFC middleweight champion in Israel Adesanya. So he trains with some dogs.
Yes.
As great as Max is, you know, he has a pair of the best hands in the sport.
Absolutely.
What else does he offer? You know, we have yet to see Max grapple. We have yet to see him, you know, utilize takedown defense and other defense and other aspects of the game, you know, that makes – I'm sorry, go ahead, because what?
No, I'm saying, yeah, because he normally doesn't have to.
Right, right. And that's the thing. Right. He doesn't have to. But see, you're talking about now a Volkanovski who not only is a great striker, but like you said, he went outside of his game by landing a multitude of leg kicks. And he can grapple. So what is going to happen and how is Max going to respond, you know, when Volkanovski or should Volkanovski decide to utilize his collective game?
Right. I mean, Max, again, you got to make the adjustments. That's the thing. He made no adjustments during that fight, which is actually rare. He normally does make adjustments and things. So if he doesn't make any adjustments, he's going to lose again.
Yeah. Again.
I mean, that's just what it is.
And my heart can't take seeing a baby blessed outside of the cage crying again. I can't take that.
I know.
Again. God, that was tough. That was so tough, man. I can't.
Man, you added mini blessed, and it is a whole
mini blessed. Exactly. That kid is so entertaining.
Man.
Now we move on.
I won't be mad if Max wins, of course.
Oh, of course not. Of course not.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the more likable guys in the sport. So.
Absolutely, and I like Alexander too.
Yes.
That's why I couldn't even really get mad, you know.
Absolutely. Either way, you'll be satisfied. So now we move on to the main event of the card. Kamaru Usman, who is the UFC welterweight champion, will be facing the guy we all wanted to see him face from the beginning. No Gilbert, no offense to Gilbert Burns, as he did what he was supposed to do to earn that spot. But everybody wanted Usman and the BMF, Jose Masvidal.
Yes.
What is your take on this main event with everything that we've discussed earlier and everything that this fight entails?
Well, the one thing about it being 6 days notice for Jorge is that if he loses the fight, obviously he has that built-in excuse, you know, 6 days notice, da-da-da-da-da-da. So I don't think that him losing will take him out of title contention, right. You know what I mean? Like, normally would, because the welterweight division is pretty stacked right now.
Yes, it is.
So, but I don't, because it's short notice, I don't think he'll be hurt if he does lose. 6 days notice, that's 6 days. But Kamaru, if I'm not mistaken, is coming off of did he have that foot surgery before he fought Colby or after?
I want to say after.
I think it was after. Yeah. So after. That's always a factor when someone is coming off of surgery and rehabilitation, you know, all that thing. Then, but again, with that 6 days notice, and this morning I watched an interview where Jorge said that he has 20 pounds to drop.
Yeah.
I'm like, because I knew, they said he's been training the whole time. I'm like, if you've been training the whole time, but walking around 20 pounds heavier until 6 days, that's a lot of weight. Ooh. And because of the styles, Kamaru with that heavy wrestling, trust me, he's not going to do what he did with Colby. He's not standing with Jorge.
Right.
That's
right.
Not going to happen.
Right.
He is going to wrestle Jorge.
Yes.
And so because that, I'm very worried, especially with him cutting 20 pounds,
yep.
that Kamaru's going to wear him out. With the wrestling, he's going to gas him. And then, of course, that opens up other things later on in the fight.
Yeah.
So, for me, Jorge, he got 3 rounds. He's going to need to win this in 3 rounds. I'm very worried about him gassing out. Mm-hmm. And I would be worried about this even if he had a full training cap.
Mm-hmm.
Just because look what Kamaru did to Tyron.
I'm still trying to grasp the concept of him dominating Tyron the way he did. Like, I still don't believe it.
Kamaru, he wears you out.
Yeah.
He zaps your energy. So, and Jorge, of course, he has that one-punch knockout power, and he carries that throughout the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're tired, if you're exhausted, you make more mistakes. He has submissions, too. Jorge's got some submissions, and he's able to bait people into him. So definitely that's tricky, too, on the ground. Kamaru can't just think, I'm going to dominate him on the ground. He'll get caught in something on the ground. Jorge's good off his back. But, I actually like both these fighters. Let me just say that off the bat, top. But how can you not like Jorge, you know, Latin Jesus?
right. How do you not like
him? he's clearly the bigger star. He's clearly more entertaining. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All of that. And, of course, for him to come in 6 days notice, cut 20 pounds, and win, that just gives so much more credit to that BMF title.
Yeah.
Like, not even the welterweight title.
Right.
The BMF title.
Right. And not to mention, you know, he comes from that backyard backyard fighting background that Kimbo Slice does. So for him to come from that, emerge into professional MMA, go through his peaks and valleys, go on a stride, and then for him to put the cherry on top by winning an official championship, that would be like the ultimate Cinderella story in mixed martial arts.
If anybody can do it off 6 days notice, it would be him.
Yeah.
But that's not where I'm going to put my money.
Right.
I can't put my money on that. That's just a lot of factors. Although I'll be rooting for him. But I am going to pick Kamaru in a 5-round decision.
Yeah. And that, you know, that caveat that you mentioned where he's literally days away, he's still 20 pounds overweight, like trying to cut that much weight on short notice. This morning.
Yeah.
Stephen
A and them this morning.
Ooh.
And he said, yeah, I got 20 more pounds.
Ooh.
I was like, you got 20 more pounds
right.
on Monday? I'm like, so, and I know he can do it, and fighters cut more. I mean, Benson Henderson used to cut upwards of 30 pounds. Even Jose used to cut like 25, 30 pounds. So, obviously, it can be done.
Yeah.
But Kamaru's style, if he was fighting another striker,
yes,
I'd be more inclined to pick Jorge. But because he's fighting a wrestler, that's just – Kamaru ain't going to stand with him.
No, he's not.
He's not.
Going to be an absolute bull and just weigh down on him. So pretty much you covered my take on that fight, as well as threw in some attributes of it that I didn't even consider. So like you, it will be an amazing Cinderella story if Jorge pulls it off. But right now it's hard for me to choose against Kamaru and moving forward. I'm having a hard time looking at that division and comfortably saying that guy could beat Kamaru.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I mean, let's not act like everybody likes to take credit away from Kamaru because they think he's boring or this, that, and the other. Right. Technically, he is so sound.
Yeah, yeah.
He's very sound as a wrestler. And even in the stand-up fight against Colby, I was impressed by his jab.
Yes.
He had it. And I think him having a jab is what won that fight because obviously it was a sloppy stand-up match because you got two grapplers, so it's not going to be a crisp fight on the feet. But him having some kind of jab,
yeah,
he was able to fight behind that. He was able to put together more combinations, and that's what won him that fight. It was the simple fact that he actually had some kind of jab. So Kamara's still growing.
He is. And that's what's scary.
I didn't think it was game.
And so that's people, what's scary.
You know, call him boring and whatnot. But he is the real, as he used to say, he's like, I'm the boogeyman of the division. Nobody wants to fight me. That was true.
Yep.
That was true. So, you know, yeah.
Here we are. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that will conclude our take on UFC 251, as well as the Mixed Martial Arts pay-per-view points game. Such a struggle to say that. I'm going to have to find a way to minimize that title. So now, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the close of the show, which is the final decision. And basically, this is the portion of the show, as you all know, where my co-host and I chime in on the subject matter, whether it's MMA-related, social justice, or whatever is on our hearts at the time. And, you know, we just go ahead and freestyle and speak on a matter for like a minute or two, giving our thoughts. And then we're going to go ahead and put a bow on this episode. So because I am one who believes in chivalry, I am going to allow my co-host to go first and give her final decision.
Oh, and so this is about anything.
Anything. Whatever is on your mind, whatever's on your heart, feel free to just go.
This is about anything. So, as a millennial, no. but for real, as a millennial, I am this time that we're living in is unique. We're living through history. And with the activism and everything that's going on, I'm very proud of my generation who quite frankly gets crapped on all the time for being lazy and this and that and the other, blah, blah, blah. You know, no matter the circumstances, unfair circumstances that we've been put under in this country, I'm happy to see my generation and the generation behind me really not just getting out there, not just in the streets, because I'm talking about pushing policy, but organizing community organizations to actually handle the problems that we're talking about, not just the protesting. So I'm just really proud of my generation. So that's cool. And the other thing that I wanted to say was the fact that we have so many people of different ethnicities out there. Just real quick, as you mentioned, I am from Utah. So being from Utah, I obviously was raised around a whole lot of white folks and encountered outright in your face walking down the street, people call me N-words from their cars and slave and tar baby, getting actually physically assaulted by white boys and white men. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually read that shit. Like,
oh my God, wow.
Yes. Wow. So, and the only thing that kept me from thinking like, you know, all white people are racist was my white friends.
Yeah. Awesome.
I can honestly say that my white friends that I had back then, who most of them still actually have to this day, they were active. I mean, they weren't just like, I'm not racist. They was like, you're not finna mistreat J-Nell. They would call people out before we went out to eat once and waiter didn't serve me. I didn't even notice. My friend called the waiter out before I could even notice. Like, they were active. Like, they would fight you if you messed with me. And so I just want to keep encouraging that.
Amen.
From our Caucasian brothers and sisters.
Amen.
And from everybody else too. Like, and this is the way we treat the least of us, they will treat the best of us.
That's
so don't think that just because it didn't happen to you that it won't eventually come around to you. You know what I mean? So I just want to keep encouraging people to be active. And I think it was Dr. Cornel West, he said, we don't need allies, we need accomplices. Like, we actually need people in the trenches with us. And so I just want to keep encouraging our non-ethnic, our non-people of color brothers and sisters to stay in those trenches with us and be our accomplices like my white friends were to me, because they're the reason why that I didn't internalize that mess.
Right.
They really are. Like, they're awesome. The reason why I've been able to be open-minded with white folks even going through that. So it matters. We have to do this together. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I'm with you.
You do your part. You don't have, I haven't protested. Like I said, I haven't protested. But what I have been doing is calling my city council, getting all the people around me about buying Black products. Like, there's other ways you can get involved. You can find organizations to donate money to. There's other things you can do. You actually don't have to put yourself out in the streets. And so that's what I encourage, is just to do something.
Yes.
And just because it doesn't affect you directly doesn't mean you're not invested. We need you to be accomplices. So,
yeah. Wow, J-Nail, that was a heck of a final decision on your part. And so since you did mention, you know, racial tension and social justice, things of that nature, I too want to stay there, but I'm going to come from a different angle, if you will. And some people may not like it, but I have to. So there is a movement. Before I get there, I don't care where you're from, whether it's the suburbs, the ghetto, whatever part of walk of life you come from. The one commonality that all children have is that on the 4th of July, they love to watch fireworks. It's just something about them that captivate us and reel us in, and we just have to partake in them. Whether we actually go to parks or major monuments, or we sit in the confines of our own neighborhood and watch people light fireworks. So this weekend, 4th of July weekend, unfortunately, there was a tragic story that took place in my hometown of Southeast Washington, D.C. An 11-year-old young man by the name of Davon McHale, an aspiring football player, was shot and killed while watching fireworks. I haven't read into the story to find out, you know, what caused the incident, or whether it stemmed from some sort of neighborhood beef or what. But right now there is a call from DC police to get the community to stand up and, you know, help turn this person in, or for the person, him or herself, to turn themselves in. There's a $25,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of this killer. It absolutely sickened me to see that an 11-year-old's life was taken doing something that children love to do. And I say all of this to say, we as a community cannot continue to shout Black Lives Matter to outside races if Black lives don't matter to us ourselves. At what point are we going to put in actions and behaviors that say our lives matter to each other? It's not that so serious that I feel like I have to kill my own brother or sister. So that story truly disturbed me. My prayer is for comfort and peace to come upon that family like no other. I know that child cannot be replaced, specifically that child and the memories that came forth in his legacy. But my prayer is that that family and that community can find peace in the midst of this disturbing, disturbing story. So that is my final decision. With that being said, ladies, and
I'm back in real quick.
Absolutely. Feel so free. Sorry, come on.
Now, it just, and as you just saying that, there has been something on my mind. And I am going to say it since I'm.
Come on.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
All right.
As we know, you know, Breonna Taylor's killers haven't even been charged, right? Let's just not forget about Black women. We're clearly on the front lines. If you look at all the photos, we out there organizing, starting the groups, fight. We fight for Black men because they're all our sons and all of that. And let's just not forget to do the same for Black women. We've had a rash of videos of Black women getting hit in the head with skateboards, shoved in garbage cans, shoved in freezers by Black men.
Yes.
So let's not give them fodder to say, look, they don't even value themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's not give them that fodder. Let's, as you say, we can't just care about it when we are being assaulted by someone who's not part of our group. Right?
Right.
So, again, let's not forget about Breonna Taylor and all of the other women who are out there. I mean, we've had female activists who've gone missing, the young lady in Florida who was raped and killed by a 57-year-old Black man while this is going on. So let's not forget about Black women here.
Absolutely. And just to add to that caveat, there's another sister, another Black woman who has been forgotten. Her name is Lavinia Johnson. And I'm going to continue to bet this home until something is done. But she was a young lady that was part of the U.S. Army. And so her body was found with bullet holes and trauma to her vaginal area. And the U.S. Army and the Department of Defense suggest that she committed suicide. I'm sorry. Once you shoot yourself once, there's no way you have it in you to shoot yourself yourself once again. There's no way you have it in you to abuse yourself and then cause trauma to your vaginal area. Like, who would go through all of that and killing themselves? So I feel like it's an insult to our intelligence. I feel like it's disrespect to that young lady and her family. And like you said, protect our women. Something needs to be done about these women that are dying at an alarming rate. And you know, it just being treated as something that is supposed to happen. It's not
just police brutality. It's the medical system, the uneven treatment. It's the education system, treatment. It's redlining. It's, you know, jobs programs. It's not just about police violence.
Absolutely. 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 J-Nail, it was an absolute treat to have you fill in for my co-host on today and do what you did. One more time, please feel free to plug all of your platforms where you can be found so that our folks can follow you.
Yes, and thank you so much. I totally had a blast. You know, I'll come back anytime. I really had fun.
The door is already open. The door is already open. Trust.
And yes, I am, again, J-Nail Owens. You can find me mostly everything at just J-Nail, J-U-S-T-J-A-Y-N-E-L-L, or at J-Nail Owens. And of course, got them earrings, just J accessories, handcrafted, handmade, one of a kind.
Thank you so much once again, ladies and gentlemen. That puts a bow on this episode of Mixed Martial Arts Point of View Podcast. I am your host, Ant, and alongside me is my illustrious co-host for today,
Just J-Nail.
Thank you. I know, right? My apologies. Maybe I should have done a little something to better prompt you. Thank you for joining us. God bless. Take care. Be easy. We'll see you next time.